always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
Vic Porcelli.
Come on, you're Italian. You understand.
Every day is a busy day all of a sudden.
You talking to me?
Tough and smart, and I love Italian, so, you know, he's definitely Italian.
At least I have this show to come and talk about it and let some stuff up.
What kind of a show are you guys putting on here today?
The Vic Porcelli Show.
Well... I was waiting for a lead in, and I went, oh, hello. Karen Cataline sitting in for Vic Porcelli, along with Ken Williams. And we have our very first guest in studio because she's part of your morning team. I'm so excited to talk to her again. Susie Moore joins us, deputy manager, managing editor of Red State and co-host of the morning show. Hi, Susie Moore. So
Hi,
good to have
Karen.
You.
Karen, great to talk to you again.
Yeah, you have given me so much material. It's like an embarrassment of riches. I started reading some of your stuff. What a good writer you are.
Well, thank you so much. That means
a
lot.
Yeah, I was prepared for, it's funny, I kept looking and there was new updates all the time. So I loved the fasten your seatbelts. We got the dissent and the Texas redistricting case, but I'm going to set that aside and it's a doozy. It's bad news, but you wrote it so well. It was entertaining to read. But let's start with Kami Mamdani.
Yeah.
Visiting Trump in the White House.
Yeah.
I see what you wrote about that, and you're kind of torn about it. Tell us why.
Well, so, you know, my instinct is to see, you know, I would love to see President Trump really put the screws to Mamdani. I mean, I don't agree with anything that he stands for, and I definitely want to see, you know, a little bit of, you know, Trump being Trump, if you will, with him. And so I had this thought, you know, is this going to be like the infamous February Zelensky meeting in the Oval Office, or is it going to be a little more cordial than that?
Yeah, but wear a tie.
Yeah. I suspect that he will, but I also... You know, I want New York to be okay. I don't want them to, suffer, no matter who's leading them, even if I would like them to learn a lesson so as to not elect people like this. So I'm like, there's part of me that wants there to be like a sliver of common ground for them to find, but I'm so torn that I'm having trouble expressing it.
No, I love it. And it's just so real. You're being that authentic self. It so happens I was just in New York City last weekend for a very quick but intense conference. Mm. And I hadn't been there for 15 years.
Yeah.
And I walked up into my favorite places on the Upper West Side. Mm-hmm. I love Zabar's. So I have to go to Zabar's. I brought home 5 pounds of coffee from Zabar.
Oh, nice.
And I couldn't help but feel that there was a gloom mm-hmm. over the city. It was not the same place I remember.
Yeah.
The charm of the Upper West Side was gone after COVID, because big banks bought up little storefronts all along the Upper West Side. And it's funny, I'm charmed that you're so Pollyanna because you're an attorney, you're a powerful writer for Red State and News Talk STL, and NYC is not okay.
No.
It is not okay. It's not going to be okay with a Marxist Muslim mayor of New York.
No.
It just isn't. And One of the things I think is interesting is how I don't think Mom Donnie ever would have said during the campaign, oh, by the way, even before I get sworn in, I'm going to go sit have a sit down with Donald Trump.
No way.
You think he would have said that?
No way.
No, but that's par for the course. He goes one way when he's getting elected, and once he's elected, he's going to do a bunch of different things. We've talked about that before. And the thing is, I don't understand this because he is now one of the leaders of the Democrat Party, and this is proof that he's able to visit with President Trump. How many other mayors are able to just get a visit with President Trump? How many others in this country? I don't think that's very common. And when I get it. New York is the biggest city in the country. I get that. But there's something that makes him appear to be more of the leader of the Democrat Socialist Party. And I want to tag them with that and keep that on them.
Yeah, they're called AOC. They're called all the other communists, mm-hmm. hidden and not so hidden, who are standing along with him.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. I think they've vaunted his candidacy and now his soon-to-be reign as mayor of New York. You know, other than maybe Muriel Bowser of D.C. has had a private one-on-one meeting with the president. But normally, you know, mayors, if they're going to be meeting with the president, it's going to be because there's like a group of mayors. It is NYC. Obviously, Trump is from New York. There is some overlap there. This afternoon's meeting is really going to be fascinating, I think.
Yeah, I wonder how much of it we'll get to know or hear about.
Oh, I think it's all going to be on camera.
You really do?
Think so?
Have you met Trump? Of course it is.
That part of it, yeah. I don't think that would be favorable for Mom Donnie, though.
No. I mean, they might talk in private, too, but there's going to be a lot. I mean, it's in the Oval Office. There's going to be cameras everywhere.
Let's do it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I can't wait. You know what I was thinking when I heard it, that it was going to happen that soon. Trump met with Kim Jong-un. He met with Xi Jinping. He met with Vladimir Putin. What's one more communist,
right?
You know, that he's going to meet with?
Exactly.
He knows how to handle this.
He does.
I don't think that there's any, well, I've said this quite clearly. I don't think there is any daylight or any difference between POTUS 44 and this guy. The only difference is he's open about it. And POTUS 44 was not.
True.
So communists lie and they'll say all kinds of things. I know that makes me sound like a radical Yahoo, but when it comes to
You're our radical Yahoo, Karen.
Yeah. Well, when it comes to communists, I'm anti-communist. What can I say? I just had a guest.
Well, you know what, Karen? I still can't, and Susie, I still can't get away from the conversation we had about the word taqiya. And that means that if you're being threatened as an Islamist, then you are allowed. In fact, you're encouraged to lie and to protect your faith. And to protect your bodily from being bodily harmed, and that's called taqiya. They actually have a word for it.
Sure.
So I think he's practicing that. That's just my opinion, but I think he is.
Oh, he could well be. I mean, I don't know.
Every turn.
The proof will be in the pudding, as they say.
Yeah.
Well, when you have an agenda that you believe in, it bothers me that there's so much media that is already trying to rehabilitate Mom Donnie. If you happen to listen, and you were probably on the air, Susie, to the news broadcast that tried to clarify, well, Trump and J.D. Vance call him a communist, but he's actually a democratic socialist, you know, as if the followers who voted for him had any clue what the difference was or even cared.
Right.
It does matter. It matters a great deal.
Well, Karen, this is something I think is very interesting because I did hear that the way that was framed in the news break, and they made it sound like President Trump called him a bad name. Well, so we're acknowledging that communism is bad, right?
Yeah,
is that,
yeah.
That's what touché, you, right? Well put.
Okay.
Yes.
Excellent.
Just as a part of this, a couple days after I left New York, there was a synagogue on the east side that was protested. You can call it a protest, but we're talking about vicious threats and maliciousness that is not part of freedom of speech. Mm-mm. And the question is, there are now a million Muslims in New York. There is a stated plan for conquest. We know that. And who in their right mind thinks that Mamdani, the mayor, is going to protect Jews in synagogues in New York City? Yeah. Does anybody think that? I mean, how dumb do you have to be?
I'm Pollyanna, that but not, not that Pollyanna.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. The same with the LGBTQIA plus yes. groups. They're yes. they're like saying, no, it's gays for Islam. I mean, they're yeah. we're all about that. They're the first ones that are going to be attacked if they
and
were.
They
to
have
take
a lot
over.
Of buildings, sadly.
They do
that. They could throw people off of
very tall ones.
It is pretty scary that people have no clue that that's what they do. The thing that bothered me so much about. At the beginning of the campaign mm-hmm. of Mamdani is that he was advocating for policies that he would never advocate in any other Muslim country. So mm-hmm. it's okay mm-hmm. to have LGBT rights, which he doesn't believe for one second.
Right.
But in any Muslim country, he would never, ever in a million years advocate for that. So what does that make him? A liar?
Right.
Well, he's practicing yeah. tequila.
Okay. Well, he's also a politician, and that kind of comes with the territory too.
Double whammy. Then.
Double, yeah. He's yeah. He double dipping on the
lies.
The lies there.
I guess we're beating a dead horse, so I'll move on. But I like beating this horse.
Well, I don't.
So
even
we'll
think
be
it's
watching,
that, Karen. I don't think it's something we need to make sure that we're making people aware of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that you know, listeners here know that they. Can make people, friends, and family aware of it too.
Yeah.
I mean, I loved it. Cynthia Nixon is my poster child for ignorant idiot. You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. What the real poster child is Sarah Jessica Parker.
Aww.
It's like Sarah Jessica Parker is so loyal to Cynthia Nixon. Has it occurred to her yet? Has it occurred to her mm-hmm. yet that she's supporting somebody who wants to eradicate, maybe wants to make New York City Judenrein?
Yeah.
Could that, has that crossed her mind at all?
Probably not in her celebrity. Not in her celebrity yeah. bubble. It probably has not.
No.
Yeah, that's the logical conclusion. And I'm sorry, but it's just ruining my beloved Sex and the City, which I loved back in the day.
I tried to watch the second one, Susie, and it was so woke. It was so woke I couldn't.
No,
stand
I didn't
it.
Even bother. I didn't even bother. No. But the original had some good moments.
Yeah, I watched the original.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about a little bit. There was breaking news, and I thought, you're just the person to talk to.
Oh, boy.
About the D.C. judge that mm-hmm. ordered an end to, well, I'm going to say law and order in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Where do we stand on that? Because you cover this meticulously.
Yeah. So this is one of many, many lawsuits that have been brought against the Trump administration regarding their National Guard deployment. We had it in L.A. We had it in Oregon. We had it in Chicago. This is D.C. And in this instance, the case went before Jia Cobb, who's one of the D.C. District Court judges. She's a Biden appointee. She's probably one of the more rational of that crew, I will say. But she did, like her judicial brethren, sistren, whatever you want to call it, she found that the Trump administration had exceeded its authority and was acting unlawfully in deploying National Guard troops to the D.C. area without specifically being invited to do so. The one thing that she did do was in making that finding, she also did immediately imposed what they call an administrative or a temporary stay on her own finding for 21 days, recognizing that the administration is going to appeal the order. And she, you know, in other words, so she didn't say, you've got to follow what I say right this second. I'm going to go ahead and pause it because I know you're already going to challenge it. So I at least appreciated that, unlike a lot of the judges, she at least recognizes that there's a, you know, a procedure that's going to be followed here.
I'm just...
It's the little things.
I'm flabbergasted on so many levels. Part of what I'm flabbergasted about again and again on a broad level is the way in which Trump has been able to expose the left as being pro crime, mm-hmm. pro-misery, mm-hmm. Pro-terrorist, pro-illegal immigration, and anti-American, all in one swell foop.
Yep.
It is amazing to me that he's got judges going in and saying, no, it's for your own good that you live in an unsafe city.
Mm-hmm.
It's for your own good. And the best you can do is in Chicago say, there are no American soldiers in Afghanistan,
right,
or wherever it was. It's like they're all Baghdad Bob. That's what
they are.
They're all Baghdad Bob. They just, that's their defense. The indefensible is that it's not happening.
Yeah. It's crazy. Trump has been referred to by some as a chaos agent, but I would say he's a clarifying agent.
Yeah.
Because. Yes. That you nailed it, Karen. All he has to do is say boo, and then everybody scurries to their corners in relation to that. And the Democrats and the left have just been insane in their adherence to that. We just must be the opposite of Trump, no matter what it is.
And he's figured it out.
He figured it out.
A long time ago.
Yeah, and
Well,
Karen, I was going to say that you make a great point, Susie, because he is a clarifying agent. Here's the definition: a chaos agent. They spread lies. They spread division. They spread things that create chaos.
Mm-hmm.
President Trump spreads facts, and he opens up the books and says, "Okay, here's what's going on right now." And they say, "Oh, we don't like you because of that." He's like a Claire. He's like bleach.
Mm-hmm.
he's a good dad in the sense that he's using reverse psychology.
He is.
Like you do with adolescents.
To great effect. Well, yeah. And that's,
don't jump off that bridge. Don't jump off that bridge.
Seemingly what we're dealing with here, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're willing. Look what they did with Epstein.
Mm-hmm.
It's astonishing.
It is.
They're willing to, you know, ideologically not literally slit their own throats,
mm-hmm.
because they think there might be a sliver of something that could be damaging to Trump, and it's damaging to them.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a masterclass for Republicans that I'm sorry to say most Republicans are probably not going to get.
No.
That's why he's so amazing, Donald Trump, because nobody does this like he does it.
Yeah. Yeah, I never have been able to figure out how they didn't think through the fact that, you know, if there really was something, I mean, maybe they thought just the smear, just the air of there being something untoward was going to be enough. But if they haven't figured out that yet, that doesn't work with Donald Trump, I you know, they're not very bright.
You know what? It occurs to me that there is something they're banking on, and it's heartbreaking because it works. I know people who are not engaged, and of course they're not engaged like you and I, and Vic's listeners are,
mm-hmm.
and because they see Donald Trump as a womanizer,
mm-hmm.
immediately, it doesn't matter what the facts are, it doesn't matter even the early days of what he said versus what he did, right?
Mm-hmm.
They believe that any sexual impropriety is believable if it's Donald Trump.
True.
And that's what they're banking on, is the intellectual laziness of their base.
But,
and sadly, it works.
But not with Bill Clinton. Funny thing that.
Yeah.
Well, if you're intellectually lazy, you get to be wrong a lot, and it doesn't matter.
Love means never having to say you're sorry, and being intellectually lazy means never having to worry about being right.
Right.
Exactly. Exactly. Boy, look at that. There's the music. Boy, you did double duty here.
I did, but it was so much fun. Thank you so much.
It's so good to have you along, and I'm always billboarding, so
awesome.
When's the show in the morning? They know. I don't know right offhand.
Oh, it starts at 5:30 here on News Talk STL, 5:30 to 9.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks so much for joining us, Susie.
Thanks, Karen.
Really appreciate it. Okay. Well, we're going to be back. And we're going to talk about the Christian genocide. Really fun stuff, but we must talk about it.
Yep.
We'll be back on News Talk STL after this.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Karen Cataline filling in for Vic Porcelli. It's amazing how many years I've been doing this with Vic Porcelli and how easy and fun it's been.
Well, it's interesting, Karen, because I mean, you and I actually have
this is hard.
It's just fun, you know, because you and I and Tim Jones, if you remember, we had Tim and I had that Sunday night show at another station, and you'd go on there all the time. We loved it, and we loved it now. Wow. I mean, it's always been a pleasure to have you on the air.
Well, yeah, I wasn't fishing for a compliment, but thank you.
But there you go.
I appreciate it. You are making it, I know, this is going to be really gushy, but you are making it extra pleasurable because you create that other element, not to mention 27 clips you gave me and so much more. You know, you gave me all the tools.
Well, thank you. I'm blushing, but I wasn't fishing for a compliment, but okay, I'll take it.
Okay. So do we have our next guest?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, see. See, we were very guest heavy this time.
It's okay.
But that's okay because, you know who, when we're guest heavy, is the other show that I do, which is now called the Alan Nathan All-Stars. The wonderful Alan Nathan passed away several weeks ago, very unexpectedly. May he rest in peace. And one of the hosts is... one of the stable of hosts, there's three, is our next guest. But he has accomplished so much on his own, in his own right. And so it's a real honor to be among the All-Stars with this next gentleman, John Hayward. He has been a writer for Breitbart News Network, such a great outlet, since 2013. He started as an amateur blogger under the pseudonym Dr. Zero for Hot Air. And when he developed such a large following and was pushed to reveal his real name, he landed even a bigger job over at full-time as a full-time columnist for Human Events in Washington, D.C. And then he does Main Street Radio, the Alan Nathan All-Stars as well. John Hayward joins us on the Vic Porcelli Show. Good to have you along, John.
It is great to talk with you. That's a walk down memory lane for me. That was such a tense moment when it was time to actually reveal my real name. I didn't know what was going to happen, but happily nothing but good things did.
Were you wearing one of those fancy furry costumes that they have in that, what is it, that musical show where you find out, I don't watch it, it's a musical show where somebody's dressed up in this massive exotic costume and then they do the big reveal at some celebrity somewhere. How was it when you revealed?
It wasn't quite that dramatic, no.
Okay. I had a feeling.
It was really interesting. It was very quickly after that I talked to Alan for the first time. You know, just people started getting in touch with me soon after I put my name out there. So it worked out really well.
How about that? Well, that's by way of a much more serious topic that I wanted to make sure that we talked about. And you're a perfect guy to talk about it with. Harris Faulkner of Fox News did a special to highlight the Christian genocide going on in Nigeria. And of all people, again, I'm not real big on pop culture, Nicki Minaj was praised for spotlighting this persecution and the body count. And you knows a little more than a little about this subject. I have a couple questions, but when did you start to become aware of this? And why isn't it being talked about more?
I think it really hit my radar screen about 5 years ago when I first started to see Christian oppression groups and human rights groups were talking about what was happening to Christians in Nigeria. And they were lamenting that no one was taking it seriously. It wasn't being written about as a genocide or as ethnic cleansing or as anything as targeted as it actually was. And it was very frustrating for the people trying to call attention to this because they knew it was only going to get worse and worse. And they were right. So I've been following this for a long time. And when President Trump really stepped in there and made a big statement about it, it was not surprising, I guess, but it was a little dismaying to see how much of the media and how the Nigerian government immediately rushed out and said, oh, no, there's no genocide at all. The government said everybody over here is getting killed and kidnapped. It's not just Christians, but there is a deliberate targeted campaign against Nigeria's Christians. It is a deliberate effort to move them out of their traditional lands and to seize those lands. And I think it does at least fall under the rubric of ethnic cleansing, if not genocide.
Well, and
Didn't we talk about the fact that the Nigerian president sat with Trump in the Oval Office, in which Trump actually made reference to it, showed him pictures, and the president just kind of poo-pooed it and said, oh, no, that's not really happening.
Yeah, he just basically refused to look at the picture, and it's still happening. It happened again yesterday. There was yet another attack. I think there's been four of them in the last couple of weeks, and the one that happened yesterday was a Catholic girls' school, and it was attacked, and a bunch of the girls were kidnapped and dragged off into the wilderness. And every time this happens, the people who live in the area will tell you the Nigerian government was nowhere to be found. There's a military outpost right down the street. They didn't do anything. They weren't patrolling. They didn't respond when we screamed for help. The local police had to step in and do what they did. That story is told over and over and over again every time this happens.
We're talking about very young girls being sold into prostitution. There was the Boko Haram, right? In which for about a cup of coffee, it was mentioned during the Obama years. Michelle Obama actually mentioned it. But not much has gotten better since then, has it?
No, it really hasn't. And that highlights one of the problems with the Obama administration's response to the Chibok kidnapping, which was hundreds of girls that were abducted all at once. It was so horrifying that it really did capture the attention of the world. But they didn't do anything effective about it, because for a lot of time, the administrations, the Obama administration, the Biden administration, they didn't want to embarrass the Nigerian government. They didn't want to put the story out there that this government is non-functional, or it's not helping its own people, or it's looking the other way while these jihadi guys run rampant. And that's one of the reasons they didn't do anything other than post a couple of pictures of Michelle Obama holding up a sign that said, bring back our girls, which did absolutely nothing. Right. And nobody really wants to
go on the ground. Which was so pathetic. Yeah,
it was. It was just so sad, but they couldn't literally do anything else. I mean, nobody really wants to send troops in there, I don't think, but maybe that is what we have to do. President Trump is talking about doing that. But the Trump administration is also beginning to lean very hard on the Nigerian government to get them to do something and to finally respond. And I think it's working. I think the tide is beginning to turn a little.
The question that I always ask, and it's a hard one to ask, is it a fair question to ask why the world's Christians have been so passive and apathetic about Christian genocides around the world? Where are the giant protests, the screaming, the yelling, the protests, all of it?
Exactly. That is a very good question. I think that's one of the most important questions to be asked right now. And I think there are several factors to the answer. But one of them is that Christianity is just on the outs with the governments of the world, with the cultures of the world. It's not taken seriously as a religion. Christians will not kill you for blaspheming against their religion. You know, if you put up a picture that they don't like, they won't drag you out in the street and kill you. So they're not taken seriously. They don't use violence and they don't use violent pressure. And increasingly, they find themselves on the wrong end of political and cultural movements that say that they're somehow inherently evil, or they're worth less than the other religions of the world, or Christians are mostly white, which obviously isn't true. The Nigerian Christians certainly aren't, but it's being caricatured as basically a white religion and part of the white power structure. And for all those reasons, Christians just do not have a megaphone that they can use to say we're being oppressed. And it's not just in Nigeria. It's everywhere you look.
Isn't that really what you describe here, partly, exactly what Western civilization is? It's a civilized society that will not kill you for what you say, grab your property for something you believe. And it's Ken Williams, who I'm glad is right here, who has been more eloquent than a lot of people I've heard talk about the desire, the stated desire for Muslim conquest through force. We're going to talk a little bit about that with Daniel Greenfield later. But Ken, this is a fact. We're watching it happen. So you're not being radical to say so.
No, I think the fear is, though, is that what happens is, and hi, John, by the way, what happens is people get afraid, their apathy and their fear of being called out as Islamophobes. And I even said, hey, our number is 314-912-1019. If you want to call up and call me an Islamophobe, I'll get you on the air. I don't care. Because I think that that's a tool that they use to shut down the people who are voicing their opinion.
Without a doubt.
No, I think you're absolutely right. Yep, there's cultural pressure, there's political pressure. And you mentioned just a minute ago about how it's a white Christian society or a tradition of a civilization. That's the problem. It's a white Christian traditional civilization, which is now under attack and has been caricatured as the source of all evil in the world. So when Christians are being oppressed around the world, the international media just isn't that interested in the story.
And Karen and John, I think that also... historically, Islam has tried to conquer every other country in the world, but they failed by war. So what they've done is they've changed their strategy. So in my opinion, Islam is an invasion and a military strategy.
It is a political system as well as it is a religion, and it's a very aggressive one. And one thing you notice about Islam everywhere in the world is that it tends to understand how important it is to capture the public square, to make sure that everybody knows Islam is here, that it's powerful now, that you can't transgress against it, you can't blaspheme against it. Islam puts a big, big emphasis on making itself public when it appears in a place, and that is weird to watch in Western societies where we spend our whole lives being told about the separation between church and state.
Well, might as well drop this one, which is that remember the Arab Spring when they told us it was going to be, I can't believe it, the time is over already. I guess that's a tease for another one. We've got an Arab Spring happening in America, and it's the use of human beings as weapons to attack from within a country. That's a big one. But that's what's happening here. If you want to see what New York is going to look like, God forbid, just look at London.
Yep.
John Hayward, where can we read you? You're just so prolific everywhere.
I'm at Breitbart.com every day. And as you pointed out, I'm one of the Allen's All-Stars. And you can find me on Twitter at Dr_0 with the number 0 at the end.
And he's not a zero, believe me. It just went too short, John. Thank you for tackling such a tough subject with us. We appreciate it. And I look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you, John.
Take care. Well, we're going to be back on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL, the Vic Porcelli Show. Don't go away.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on NewsTalkSTL.com.
Well, I requested to have this next gentleman on. It's so much fun. I ask and I get. It's really amazing. So this next organization that this I'll just introduce you because there's so much to say. I'm getting tongue-tied. Gabe Conger is the president and CEO of a group that you may have heard of or may you have. Maybe you have not. The Bradley Impact Fund. It's a donor-advised fund based in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Previously, Gabe held positions with the Lind, Harry Bradley Foundation, the Heritage Foundation, which is a little bit under fire these days, the Leadership Institute, and the Conger Collection. Gabe received his BA degree in history from Creighton University. And we have him right now, Gabe Conger, here to talk about the Bradley Impact Fund and the impact it has. And it's great. Are you there?
Hey, good morning, Karen. Thanks for having me on.
So good to have you. Yeah, I kind of botched that at the beginning. But let me say, one of the reasons I had you on is because in Colorado, my home state, I'm no longer there, a lefty reporter cited the Bradley Impact Fund as a dangerous, I love that, leftist entity that is a danger to the left, which is hilarious since the left has completely taken over Colorado. Colorado is behaving like San Francisco. Republicans have absolutely no power there, but yet the left is still threatened by the Bradley Impact Fund. What they didn't understand is that you represent numerous donors, large and small, who have conservative views and want their donor intent to be respected. So talk a little bit about the Bradley Impact Fund, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, sure. And thanks so much again for the opportunity to come on. I guess, as the saying goes, if you're not getting flack, then you're not over the target. So the Bradley Impact Fund, we were founded in 2013 and helped capitalize by the Lyman Harry Bradley Foundation, which you mentioned, which is one of the premier conservative grant-making institutions in the country and has protected the donor intent of Lyman Harry Bradley since its founding. And so we're a donor advised fund, which means that donors will make gifts to us, and they'll receive a tax deduction, and then they're investing those funds however they want, including in the organizations that they care about and they believe in. And so we'll work with donors to help craft gift agreements to their alma mater, to help identify organizations in their communities that are doing amazing work, and then over the long term with their legacy planning, make sure that their giving doesn't go the way of the Ford Foundation.
So. Exactly. The reason this is so important is that I've heard numerous conservatives on talk radio lamenting, "Where are our billionaires?" Well, then we got Elon Musk, but Elon Musk is awfully eccentric and you can't depend on Elon Musk, although I will be forever grateful that he spent, what was it, $47 billion dollars on Twitter to restore free speech. But what about Soros? What about Gates? All of these people who have an enormous amount of power on the left. Soros does it by numerous organizations that he gives money to, and it's not him. He probably has gone the way of Biden, but it's his four sons, namely his eldest, Alex Soros, who is furthering the cause of communism around the country. They hate America. They hate American values. So for conservatives to know that they can support conservative causes in this fashion, a lot of people never even heard of the Bradley Impact Fund. So you told me, by the way, that even under Trump, conservative donors are still being suppressed. Could you get tell us more about that, because I don't think people think that's even going on today because Trump is in the White House, right?
Yeah, and part of it comes back to the vehicle of a donor advised fund and sometimes what people are aware of or what they're not aware of. And so kind of giving some statistics and data to help kind of get to the point. For the most recent years available, total charitable giving in the United States in 2023 was something like $557 billion, which is an incredible amount. I mean, the American people are truly unique in the world and support charitable causes in their communities, education, and otherwise. It's truly unique. And within that amount, almost 10% comes out of donor advised funds. What people don't understand with donor advised funds that you have technically, legally given the money away. And so when you go to make a grant out of your account, you're advising it. And so the organization that you're working with is, it's legally possible for them to deny those grants that you want to make. And that's still happening today, or this year rather, with any number of conservative and Christian organizations around the country. And it's just, it's not obviously not something that people will put on their websites or in their materials, that, we reserve the right to not support the causes that you want to, especially the conservative ones.
And so, who's doing the discrimination? I mean, you're saying that other donor advised funds, they may not pay attention to donor intent as you do, but you know, we watched debanking, we watched out and out discrimination against conservative donors, which, by the way, it clearly was a tactic to make an example of conservative donors so they'd be scared to give money to Republican candidates, Republican causes. I mean, there's no stone unturned when it comes to intimidation of conservatives from the left that we've seen. But I know it seems a little dry, perhaps, but conservatives need to know that they can use this vehicle to advance the things they really care about. The stakes today are higher than ever. We've spent a lot of time talking about a communist mayor coming into power in New York City. And what's going to stop that, unfortunately, is money. Money that conservatives and the Trump coalition are going to use in order to fight back against communists who want to take over giant states, cities in America, and tell everybody that it's under international law. How about that?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
That's incredible.
There wasn't a question there, was there? So,
I think if you look at the broader, you know, philanthropic landscape, I think it's kind of the, what is it called? The O'Sullivan's Law. If an institution is not explicitly conservative, it will probably go in the other direction over time. And so kind of with anything in life, it comes down to kind of trust in the relationships that you have. And so when it comes to charitable giving and picking a partner and a vehicle, so to speak, that you really trust and you know the people and they actually believe in your values. And so, for example, there's a saying that the devil's plaything is an unrestricted gift to a college or university.
And so, right.
You know, that's a... I don't disagree at all. So it's really, you know, how you give, how you craft gift agreements, you know, the specific things that you can restrict giving to, and then having someone who, you know, you feel very confident can work through. You know, lots of folks will have accountants that they trust, but then when it comes to charitable giving, you know, they're just, you know, just making gifts in a way that somehow they can maybe do a do more due diligence or have help to really have the impact that they want to have.
So. Yeah, well, Gabe, I think that's one of the reasons why this lefty reporter felt so threatened by the Bradley Impact Fund, because tens of millions of dollars were coming in that were very targeted and specific to conservative causes. And of course, the left doesn't think we're allowed to do that. If they could, they would be a one-party rule and there wouldn't be any opposition. I want to shift gears because I know you do something else. For the listeners out there, and I'm not getting paid for this at all, the listeners out there who may have $10, $20, $50 million that they're putting together into a legacy for an endowment or something after they are elsewhere and no longer with us, you do that too, don't you? You focus on donor intent for people who want to give money and leave it as a legacy to causes, which we've watched these causes change over time. And you're the watchdogs who say, okay, that legacy is going to be funded as long as this or that organization remains true to its goals and doesn't go the way of the Ford Foundation. So take the last couple of minutes to talk about that, because you know, I want to see listeners be able to see their money, their hard-earned dollars that they want to give charitably, go to where they want so that we can preserve this country. And we have that capacity to do so.
Yeah, and actually, you don't have to look too far from your neck of the woods. There's a story that was pretty widely reported in the media. A fellow named Sherlock Hibbs is born in Cameron, Missouri, on December 8th, 1941. He enlisted, served in the Navy, served in the Atlantic and Pacific Theater, served his country honorably. He was a Mizzou grad, and he wanted to give back, and so set up a significant endowment and crafted an agreement that would help support a very specific strain of economic professors and of teachings. And with the public reporting and the lawsuit that followed, it appears as though Mizzou recast some of the descriptions of the faculty members and what they were up to, and ultimately settled and gave a significant chunk of that endowment to Hillsdale College, I think almost $5 million. But the point being, the way that we help donors is, so let's say you care.
I got to wrap it up in about a minute. Cause. Sorry.
Yeah. Right. So you care very deeply about a cause. Instead of giving it all to an organization right away, you have that set up, that legacy set up with an organization and like the Bradley Impact Fund, that we can help protect your donor intent over time instead of having to try and sue after the fact to try and reclaim an endowment if your donor intent has been violated.
I think that's the best way to do it, to have somebody who manages those funds, doles it out slowly over time. And I've been very impressed with what I've learned about the Bradley Impact Fund. I don't have those kind of dollars, but if I did, I would want my money to go to something that I care about. Thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. People can go to Bradley Impact Fund online. Gabe Conger, thanks for joining us. We're going to take a top of the hour break, and we'll have one more hour of the Vic Porcelli Show here on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.